This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. Thanks so much for listening to me here. We have a big hour coming your way. Alan West is going to be at the bottom of the hour. We have a lot to cover, including fast moving events at the White House. There's a lot of events taking place. And of course, all eyes on the market after that horrendous day yesterday, in which you had a precipitous drop of 900 points. NASDAQ shed 4%. But got to keep the big picture. No panic on the Trump team. They say, look, we're trying to privatize. We're trying to privatize our economy and jobs. We're trying to shrink the federal government and the responsibility in order to get the budget down. Plus, you make more in the private sector for the most part. And we're trying to bring manufacturing home. And to do that, huge incentives. And there's a lot of pledges to come back. We have not seen the push yet. That'll all come together. That's the hope of the administration. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
So I think that would be a very good signal to have the presidents together signing this deal. It's a really good deal, importantly for the American people as well as the Ukrainian people. It's a way for the American taxpayer to recoup some of their investment in Ukraine.
All eyes on Jeddah as Zelensky, not Zelensky, but his team, Waltz and Rubio, work on a path to peace. What's missing? Any proof that Russia have the same objective?
Number two.
The herd is really negative right now, and it's focused all on tariffs. We're getting good stuff coming for this economy and for the markets. And I think some of this is a sales job. They have to go out there and maybe stop talking about tariffs so much.
Right. Perhaps Charles Gasparino. Mr. Experience, great business journalist. Economy in flux as the market is rocked by recession, fears, and Trump tariffs. Why we should hold on tight and get ready for restructuring that will have us more economically powerful than ever. Meanwhile, Trump president genius Elon pays a huge price for reining in our out-of-control budget.
Number one.
Now we're facing a horrifying reality that our own student has become a political prisoner here in the United States. We must not go down this authoritarian path one step further.
Sickening. Your own student is organizing pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian protests against Jews. That's your own student. Campus chaos, anti-Semitism raging on colleges across the country as they rally for a Syrian Palestinian detained for his pro-Hamas anti-Semitic operations. Trump won't tolerate backlash in full stride. You know that. Massive federal funding is at stake for all these elite institutions. And I'm thrilled that Trump has taken this on. My hope, my fear was he wasn't. He's going to say, I got so much to do, I'm not going to do it. But Trump can do multiple things at one time. And now he put Marco Rubio into finding out what the deal was with this Mahmoud Khalil. And it turns out he is a security risk, according to the State Department. And he is one of the organizers of the extreme unrest and the building takeovers that took place at Barnard last week and Columbia last semester. Here are the protesters yesterday protesting for this ungrateful green card holding immigrant. Cut one.
Hands off Mahmoud Khalil!
Hands off Mahmoud Khalil!
Hands off Mahmoud Khalil!
Hands off.
Well, let me just explain a couple of things. There's multiple reports now. Jeff Lacks has handed me over the Times of Israel and then others in the Daily Telegraph that shows that these protests in America and throughout the West are being financed and pushed and marketed by the same Hamas militants that killed so many on January 7th and took over close to 200 hostages and are still holding at least 53 against their will and caused so much unrest, death, and destruction in their aftermath. How do you feel about that? Students, many of which foreign, or those of 20-something age who want to disrupt life on college campuses and be anti-Semitic. Cut two.
Now we're facing a horrifying reality that our own student, a member of the Columbia community, has become a political prisoner here in the United States. This is a dismal moment in American history. We must not go down this authoritarian path one step further.
Another Columbia professor, which I don't have his name, but I hope you never get him if you recognize his voice, and go to Columbia, turn around and walk out. This anti-Israeli mob that was put together by Khalil, who's behind all of it, had signs that said Hamas Media Office. Would we ever tolerate it if it said Al-Qaeda or ISIS? No. Hamas is our enemy. They're the same people. They just have different focuses. One focuses on Israel, the other focuses on the West, and some focus on us exclusively, although we've done a great job killing all of them. One narrative had the Al-Aqsa Flood. That was a name that was a sign that was being held, and the name the Palestinian Terror Group gave its brutal incursion into Israel. So that day, January 7th, has a nickname, and people are holding up those signs in New York City. Are you okay with that? Then they would take over the Milstein Center. Are you okay with that? Listen to Rashida Tlaib, an embarrassment to this country. And you people in Michigan that put her in power should be really embarrassed. Cut three.
Everyone should be concerned about this. If you believe in constitutional rights, you understand that they're targeting this person, and everyone knows he has been very vocal against the genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza. And they're targeting him and refusing him constitutional rights. Who's next?
So they can't, right now it's going to be in court Wednesday. They're holding him in a prison outside New York State, and they're going to deport him. You know, when you have a green card in this country and you get caught shoplifting or driving drunk, you're out, ineligible to come back here. People on green cards who are serious about becoming American citizens know they have to play the perfect game. You don't even want to be caught speeding. That's a problem. And this guy's organizing protests against American institutions? Are you crazy? Here's more from Colombia. People who believe that Khalil is a hero. Cut four. This is Pearson Lund.
I think it's totally unacceptable. Like, there's no reason why a student should be detained by ICE of all organizations just, you know, for, you know, just is this part of free speech? This is a part of what we're guaranteed to as rights within this country. There's no reason why anyone should be arrested for this reason. Like, they're not inciting, like, terrorism. They're not inciting any violence. They're just trying to make their message heard.
Really? Not inciting terrorism? Not inciting violence? Taking over buildings? Knocking out a security official who tried to keep them out of buildings? Then demanding to be negotiating with the president? That's something that's just free speech? It is not free speech. You can't stop people from going to class. You can't threaten their lives like these Jewish students are in these elite institutions and think that's free speech. Everybody knows that. And if you believe that at Columbia, which you usually have almost perfect SATs to get in, you have to either know someone or be a legacy or be one of the high IQ people. If we are training people like that, we should all be concerned. That's a Columbia undergrad. Chris Swecker, the former assistant FBI director. Cut eight.
These cases, and when I say these cases, the activities on these campuses that are federally subsidized, if you will, have been grossly under-investigated over the last 4 years.
That's right.
You know, it's bad enough that people travel interstate and to come to a campus and block access to Jewish students. They kidnap or confine people inside the buildings, damage the buildings, block public access, block roads. But if they travel interstate to do that and if they're financed by a foreign terrorist organization, which I think is what you're referring to,
that's right,
under a federal statute, they can get 20 years in prison. The only thing I'm saying here is these cases need to be fully investigated, and we need to find out who's financing this, because this is a very serious crime. They're demonstrating on behalf of Hamas.
You idiots. I mean, how could Chris Swecker be anything but 100% correct? Why would we tolerate the advertising and the promotion of a terrorist organization? It's time for a real administration to follow the money, and my hope they will. Secretary of State Marco Rubio was presented with intelligence that determined that Khalil, a Syrian-born Palestinian who received his graduate degree from Columbia, was a threat to national security, but still living on campus, by the way. Why is he? He should be off campus. He's done. These are subsidized housing by universities. He should be living on his own. I love him out of the country. But this U.S. District Judge Jesse Furman said Khalil is to remain in the United States to preserve the court's jurisdiction. They wanted to send him out right away. So my hope is it's just the beginning. Trump put out on Truth Social that this is just the beginning, too. We'll see. I hope only the worst. But today, look for a lot of video of campus unrest. So let it reveal itself. Now you keep this in mind, Yale, Harvard, Columbia, NYU. You got millions of dollars, in cases of Columbia, billions of dollars in contracts and grants from the federal government. You've already lost $400 million. $400 million so Jews can feel insecure? Keep it up. You're going to lose even more. How much can your legacy handle? You know, how much can your endowment handle from people who have had success after leaving your college institution? We're about to find out if you want, you're going to be able to tap into your savings account. And finally, before we take a break, and I want to get your perspective on this, the economy is struggling as it transitions, as I mentioned before. So Donald Trump is not panicking and doesn't mind saying things that really rock the market, like he can't rule out a recession. Cut 12.
Look, I know that you inherited a mess, and you said that the other night.
I've only been here,
you know,
for a while.
Are you expecting a recession this year?
I hate to predict things like that. There is a period of transition because what we're doing is very big. We're bringing wealth back to America. That's a big thing. And there are always periods of, it takes a little time. It takes a little time. But I think it should be great for us.
It will. And the tariffs are a way to bring jobs back here, manufacturing back here, if nothing else. Now, maybe prices will take off. I like to see how it relates to wages, because they say wages are expected to rise across the board. Blue-collar jobs, 3%, let alone the raises you might be getting and earning. And I bring back, I remember, Sean Fain, the UAW president, no friend of the Republicans, is supporting all these moves. And I think this word from Charles Gasparino, his years of working for his CNBC and being part of Wall Street, cut 17.
The herd is really negative right now, and it's focused all on tariffs. And I think what Scott Bessent needs to do, that's the Treasury Secretary, I saw him at the Economic Club, and, you know, it was a very wonky speech where it was all about tariffs and trying to explain it and all this stuff. And at the end, he starts talking about all the good stuff, the candy that's coming. We're getting good stuff coming for this economy and for the markets. And I think some of this is a sales job. They have to go out there and maybe stop talking about tariffs so much and start talking about how we're going to infuse the economy. We're going to release the animal spirits. We're going to deregulate stuff.
Yeah, good idea. I mean, look, you know, the president's cracking down on the border, but he doesn't bring up the wall. You know, he was talking about how he's taken away everyone's aid in Central and South America. But instead, he sent Marco Rubio down to create conversations and a strategy this time. It shows he's changed. I could easily see him talking less about tariffs until April, when if he sees continuing crackdown on fentanyl from Mexico and Canada, he just says, look, we're set. I'm happy with the effort. If I see the effort dropping off, I'll let you know, warn you about tariffs. And then he's got a meeting coming up, I think they're going to announce soon, in Mar-a-Lago with President Xi of China. And that'll be another interest. Are they going to phase one of a new trade deal? Are they going to just reinstitute what they were going to do until the pandemic hit and Joe Biden won the election? So when we come back, your calls, 1-866-408-7669. And then at bottom of the hour, I talk about some stunning news out of Houston, Texas, when it comes to getting illegal alien criminals out of this country. The numbers are stunning. I'll share them with Alan West when we come back. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
When people criticize, say, what Doge is doing, we say, well, which part specifically? Because we put all of the actions of the Doge team on the Doge.gov website and on the Doge handle on X. So we post the receipts. So it's like, this action has been taken, this action has been taken. So when we get criticism, we say, like, of what? Which line do you disagree with? Mm. Like which cost saving do you disagree with? And then people usually can't think of any.
So Elon Musk, obviously Tesla's paying a big price. Sales are down in Europe. Domestically, we see some of the showrooms get ransacked. I saw one of their new trucks get blown up. people are taking it out on Tesla, who they're chanting, "We don't need clean. We need clean air, not a billionaire. You idiots! It's an electric car." And just crazy. I think that if you have the wherewithal and are thinking about another car, please get a Tesla. And just give, you, by the way, you'll be able to charge it, unlike other charging cars, other electric cars, that they have yet to build the terminals. Have they built 11 terminals since we gave the infrastructure bill 4 years ago or 3 years ago? Meanwhile, if you're curious about Doge, instead of just talking generically or anecdotally about Doge, just go to Doge.com. Yesterday, for example, the weekly credit card update, the pilot program with 16 agencies to audit unseen, unneeded credit cards. After 3 weeks, they've saved $200,000. Credit cards have been deactivated. Great progress. Give you another example. Great work by Lee Zeldin. The cancellation of non-essential grants contracts, including $3.2 million, to consulting firm to develop a reporting system to collect data on Justice 40, the EJ scorecard, and other EJE credit reports. So Lee Zeldin, with the help of Doge, found that. How about Marco Rubio? After a six-week review, we've officially canceled 83% of the programs at USAID. How about this? The Department of Government Efficiency itself, all payments and soon-to-be justification will be posted publicly at the first 37,207 grant payments. 3 days worth have now been posted. So that's below this. It goes on and on and on. If you're curious, just tell me what your objection is. Now, what some people are saying, well, you're firing people. Well, they're firing people. Some they wanted to hire back. Now they have cabinet secretaries in place, but get ready. They're leaning out everything. They're leaning out government jobs to make it more efficient and make our government sustainable. Right now, we're $2 trillion over budget. I don't know what else you need to understand. $2 trillion over budget, $37 trillion overall. The interest on all that debt surpasses the number one expense, and that is our military. Here's what Elon Musk said. Cut 23.
What we're trying to do is get that number down to a much smaller figure, save money for the American taxpayer, stop money being spent on things that I think very few taxpayers would agree make sense. You know, transgender animal surgeries, or why are we spending money? Why are American tax dollars being spent on this? The president's gone through a long list of absurd things. Why are the 20 million people who are definitely dead marked as alive in the Social Security database? Why were hundreds of millions of dollars of Small Business Administration loans were given out to people aged 11 and under, mm-hmm. According to the Social Security? I mean, like, these must be some very enterprising 8-year-olds.
Give you an example. Secretary Brooke Rollins canceled $600,000 grant to study menstrual cycles in transgender men. You upset at that? Kelly Loeffler is going to save money. Require anybody, she's on small business. Anybody that wants a small business loan, you have to show proof of citizenship. That will save money. Also, get rid of the fraud. I just don't understand. And he's paid such a personal price on this. Half the country thinks he's a villain. Most people are for his agencies outside Los Angeles, Washington, and New York. You would never understand. You never figure that if you listen to the other channels. But the guy's a genius. Personal skills are average. Intellect is through the roof. He's worked with the secretaries. This could be an historic administration with things like that. And you heard some Barack Obama officials say, man, we should have done this.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
They continue to say things like the illegals and that they broke the law coming in. But what they're not telling the American people is that it is a civil violation. It is not a criminal violation to enter the country illegally. It's not a criminal. It's a crime. It's not a crime.
Really? And that is Jasmine Crockett, the spokesperson for the Democratic Party of Texas. And says it's not a crime to enter our country illegally. Okay. Why doesn't everyone just come then? I believe she's a lawyer, too. I'm going to see if I can get a counterpoint by going to Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Executive Director. Colonel, welcome back. Your thoughts about Jasmine Crockett, the pride of Texas.
It's good to be with you, Brian, and thank you for sticking your finger in my face about that Pride of Texas thing. You know, she is there in Texas Congressional District 30, which is in Dallas County. We got a great candidate that's going to be running against her by the name of Sheldon Daniels. But I think that everyone should go to Jasmine Crockett's house, and also I think she has another townhouse that somehow she's been able to afford, even on a congressional member salary, and just walk into her house and say that, you know, if you can walk into the country and it's not a crime, I can walk into your house. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go into your kitchen and sit down and have a nice, dinner or meal or what have you. This is absolutely absurd, and this is the mindset of the progressive socialist left and why they will continue to lose if they continue to allow someone like a Jasmine Crockett to be their mouthpiece.
I love it. I think it was brilliant of Trump the first term to let the squad speak. And the more they speak, the more you realize they don't even understand America, nor do they like America. Tom Homan answered with Stuart Varney yesterday, Cut 37.
It's a crime to enter the country illegally. On Title 8, United States Code 1325, and it's really pathetic that any member of Congress don't understand what the law says. They wrote the law. They enacted the law. It was signed by a president. It's a criminal violation to enter the country illegally. If you've entered it prior, it's a felony. So, you know, I've been saying this for I don't know how long on your show, and I had to educate AOC years ago during the hearing that it's a crime to enter this country illegally, and we're going to enforce those laws.
All right, so your thoughts about how bad she looks and why nobody like Hakeem Jeffries reins her in. Evidently, Hakeem Jeffries told him no more antics before, and then afterwards got his Democrats around and said, stop with the signs, stop with the screaming, stop with the protests. Nobody listens to that guy.
Well, you know, the Democrats right now remind me of the movie Stripes, just a bunch of misfits. And, of course, Bill Murray was in charge of the misfits, and that's kind of Hakeem Jeffries. But, again, think about this. You're a lawmaker. You don't understand U.S. code. And, furthermore, you don't understand the Constitution of the United States of America in Article 4, Section 4, where it says that the federal government is supposed to guarantee to every state in the union to protect them from invasion, which if someone comes into your home illegally, that's called a home invasion. What's the difference when you come across the border? So it is a crime. And the fact that you have someone that is a congressional member from Texas, where we have some 400,000 illegal immigrants in Houston, we have this huge enclave called Colony Ridge. We just had a large ICE raid down in Texas. I believe there were some 600 criminal illegal immigrants that were apprehended. She's on the wrong side of this issue, and her party's on the wrong side of this issue.
So I want to give people more details, which you just talked about. ICE and his partners executed 71 criminal arrests and arrested 543 illegal undocumented aliens in Houston and charged with or convicted of criminal offenses while being illegally in the U.S. Of the criminal aliens arrested, 140 were charged or convicted of aggravated felonies. 140 were charged of with violent offense. 34 criminal aliens charged or convicted of sex offense, 38 convicted of illegal firearms, 52 charged or convicted of illicit narcotics, 51 convicted of property crimes such as burglary or theft, 93 convicted of driving drunk. So they're scooped up. What a move by ICE. You got to salute these guys and women, I'm sure, that have to put their lives on the line because these guys have nothing to lose. And that really talks about the need for great intelligence and how detrimental it is to try to do this work in a sanctuary city.
Yeah, and think about that. I mean, we just had those sanctuary city mayors go up to Capitol Hill last week. And why would they want to protect these people that are doing exactly what Tom Homan is saying? They present a national security threat and domestic security threat to the American people, and they will be removed. Isn't it great to now have ICE doing their job, which they were not allowed to do for the past 4 years? And think about this. If Kamala Harris had been elected president, she would have been getting rid of ICE. So all of these people people that we're finding would still be here in the United States of America thriving. And when you look at a person like Jasmine Crockett, she would just say, hey, more of you can come because it's not a crime to come into this country, and we'll give you taxpayer-funded benefits as well. So I think that right now Tom Holman is without a doubt doing what the American people wanted to be done. And, you know, President Trump needs to talk about this even more.
I want you to hear. So I want to fast forward over to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, where at this hour there is peace talks going on, or ceasefire talks going on with Ukraine. They have the higher Yermak and all the higher officials, not named Zelensky, are there, where they say it's not going to be the major story, the minerals deal. He says that'll be signed. But we're going to just see about the sincerity of how much they want to stop the fighting. At which time, we just got a report that Witkoff's going over to Russia. Here's what General Jack Keane said, cut 35.
It remains to be seen if Russia is gaming us here, and are they going to move off their very hardline positions that they put on the table right now. And if they don't move off of those, then President Trump's going to have to take some action, slap some tough sanctions on them, possibly upgun Ukraine a little bit, to show definitely that Russia, if you're going to come to the table, we're not going to buy into these hardline conditions you've got. You're going to have to make some compromises.
What do you think? I think the Russians have no interest in stopping the fighting. They don't know how, even though their numbers and their casualties are catastrophic. Your thoughts about what do you think Russia's tone will be after they, I'm sure, I think Jeddah will go fine. But after that, what do you think Russia's tone will be?
I think Russia's tone will be whatever Xi Jinping tells Vladimir Putin it should be. Right now, Xi Jinping is the top dog. He is telling what Russia to do. He's telling Iran what to do. And if all of a sudden we start to put energy sanctions on Russia, that's going to affect China. So I think that that's the most important thing, is that we have to operate from a position of strength, a position of the high ground. And we got to get the people in Europe to understand, why are you going to Russia for your energy resources? We're going to start drilling here. We will send you liquefied natural gas. Cut off Vladimir Putin. So I think that Vladimir Putin right now is very concerned.
So what would it take to get their attention? And if they say no international troops, under any circumstance, there's no way under any circumstances Ukraine can possibly stop the fighting, because they'll end up right back in this spot again.
No, you're absolutely right. I think there has to be some type of international troops, because the bottom line is this. You cannot trust Vladimir Putin. Moldova, Georgia, Ukraine, we've seen it all. We know that he is a person that you've got to play a strong hand with. And I think that's what President Trump will end up doing, saying, look, we're not going to have any more of your incursions. If you think that you're going to keep Crimea, if you think you're going to keep this bit of terrain that you have in eastern Ukraine, we're going to make sure that you don't continue any more of these incursions deeper into the country. So I think that's the position that we have to take. And if it means an international peacekeeping force, an international force that is there, I think that President Trump will stand for that.
I hope so, because I understand that friendly allies can sometimes get on each other's nerves. We watched Macron hit us and pull our ambassador when Joe Biden decided to steal the nuclear submarine contract from Australia. We know that Charles de Gaulle spent his entire professional career getting under the skin of American presidents. It doesn't mean they're not allies. There are different UK prime ministers that don't get along with different presidents. It doesn't mean we're not allies. And I sense that somehow people are getting the wrong message from the fact that Zelensky and Trump clashed. I hope people realize Ukraine is our ally.
Yes, Ukraine is our ally. Donald Trump is not going to allow Ukraine to fall. And first and foremost, he's not going to play into the hands of the left politically, who would love to see, you know, continue on this propaganda message that he's just a puppet of Putin, blah, blah, blah. So I think that he is going to do the right things. But he is going to get Zelensky's respect, and I think that's why he's giving that little slap down.
Go get him, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Things are always happening in Texas. Thanks so much.
God bless. Take care.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll talk about that. Also, yesterday, not going under, not missing my radar, is what RFK did yesterday with some major food manufacturers. There's a lot of hope in RFK in that spot, and I think we have the beginning of the payoff that began on Monday. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
He's the inspiration for the mute button. Host of One Nation and co-host of Fox and Friends, Brian Kilmeade.
Brian?
Yes?
You actually host a show called Fox and Friends.
Right. That's why I thought I was perfect for today's talking
to Yes. You. It's kind of interesting and ironic that you are on Fox, but you never have Friends on.
Right. It's true.
But do they, like, but you understand what I'm saying. It's like friends are the people that tell you the harsh truths.
Absolutely.
And you can't tell harsh truths in a liberal world because you'll get canceled.
So I was thinking a lot about this. And then when I went to college around the same age as you, no one really knew politics. I mean,
yes.
Maybe Berkeley's different from Long Island University. You could never have gotten
there. Oh, mine's a real school.
Yeah, that's right. If you call Berkeley a real school, I'm sure that's not on your resume.
Long Island University?
You couldn't have gotten in.
Is that a fake school?
Right.
That sounds like a sitcom college. I'm off to Long Island University, Mom. Sorry. Okay, it's real. I apologize. Some online correspondence thing.
It's the Teddy Roosevelt School of Journalism. They have so many great schools. They have a veterinarian school. They got a great soccer team. I can go on.
Do they have sports?
Yeah, that's...
So it was an anti-soccer and anti-Friends and anti-LAU. It was hard to... Why would I do that show? Why do I go on?
There's something about him being so cruel to you that I think fills your heart.
I know. I kind of like it. And I would add this, too. They're able to advertise our live shows, which is coming up soon. Coming up next weekend. Not this weekend. Weekend after.
March 22nd.
I'm
going to
be at St. Louis at the Factory in St. Louis. So KTFK.
KFTK.
KFTK, too. All those listeners who always, they're our most supportive, one of our most supportive markets. We have already sold more tickets than we ever have before, but the place is huge.
But there's still some left.
Yeah, there's still some left. I don't know, there's like two seats in the front row, which is weird. Is that for your family or something? I've never seen the front row. There's two seats in the front row. Then the whole bottom basically sold, except for these two little, did you notice? Two little seats up the middle.
I have not studied the seating chart.
And then you go up and it's all, and then it's just on the left and right side are sold, just in the middle. So if we sell that thing, it'll be the biggest venue we've ever played.
So when you're on stage, are you going to look for those two seats and be like, these are the people that bought those tickets after I discussed it? They're probably VIP tickets, which there are also VIP opportunities available.
Oh, yeah. So that's where we meet before the show. And we talk about everything going on in the news, what the show's going to be like. What we do is try to bring history to life. So I have seven history books and two sports books. And what I do is try to put it into an inspiration, motivational, patriotic night. But it's fun, unscripted. There's no teleprompters, cue cards. And we've done this about 25 times. And each show gets better.
Absolutely.
And we have a T-shirt gun.
We do, which we still have to figure out how we're getting to St. Louis.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we need to figure out how to mail it. You told me I need to go to a certain place.
Because it's got a cartridge, exploding cartridge. Like, it's got a cartridge. It's like you use the same cartridge for
paintball. Like a CO2 container, right? Yes.
Yeah, for paintball.
So I think you have to mail the CO2 separately or order it.
Should we just mail it and see what happens?
I mean, do you want it back? I don't know how.
Oh, they might take it. Maybe. They're not going to arrest us, though.
I would hope not.
Eric, you know everything. Am I going to be able to mail this?
Just hope that it doesn't explode in transit, because then...
Oh, they're worried about it exploding?
Yeah.
Oh. I just thought they were just being... They want a fee or something. See...
They don't want it, yeah.
UPS to UPS. UPS can handle it, can't they?
I would imagine. I think if it doesn't have the cartridge, we should be fine.
Because they say you need it... something that's got to be flammable or some type of... You got to have some type of certification to be able to receive my T-shirt gun. And you got to wonder, is it worth it? Because then we got to bring it back.
Well, that is a discussion we can have off air. Yes, I mean, the T-shirt, I guess, St. Louis, do you want to see the T-shirt gun?
Yes.
That's the question. We're also going to be in Dayton, Ohio in June. So
yeah, June 21st.
Yes.
Yes, that's going to be a great WHIO listeners. I cannot wait to go back. Meanwhile, as I was telling you before, one of the undercurrent success stories of President Trump's campaign was what he wanted to do with our food and our drugs. And RFK Jr. has really put a lot of time into this, whether it's things on vaccines, to our love of daily medications, to what we eat and the chemicals that we just accept. And that whole movement by Callie and Kelly Means, Casey Means, with their book, Good Energy. And that was followed up with the Food Babe. And then more and more people got educated on this. And they realized, we think we're eating good. And we have no idea. And we're eating less. But why are we so sick as a country compared to where we were 50 years ago? So RFK met with two food manufacturers yesterday, General Mills and another. Here's a little of what he planned on doing with what's in our ingredients. Cut 40. He mentioned this to Sean on Sunday prior to this meeting on Monday, but this was his approach.
I mean, I have a libertarian outlook. People should be able to make their own choices. If you want to eat a donut or seed oils, you should be able to. You should be able to exercise informed choice. You should know what that product is, what's in your food, and what the health impacts are. And that's all we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to incentivize people to, we're going to incentivize companies to be transparent. And we're going to inform Americans about what's making them sick. Nobody wants to be sick.
So he had yesterday, prior to this meeting, said the U.S. Secretary of Health, RFK, has directed the Food and Drug Administration to revise safety rules to help eliminate a provision that allows companies to self-affirm food ingredients. By the power vested in me, I declare all these foods safe and these chemicals worth it. So they're going to stop that. They're going to have to go to HHS in order to get the FDA in order to get approved of these chemicals. They also praised a burger chain called Steak and Shake over the weekend because they moved to making their French fries in beef tallow because that is better than some of the corn, I guess some of the other stuff that they've been making French fries in. Wouldn't you think that beef tallow is worse for you? I mean, beef tallow, it's like you stick it in beef.
You are just very anti-beef, anti-red meat.
But I just think that, well, that evidently, they basically told General Mills and others, you're taking these chemicals out and you got to do it right away. And the fear is that these lobbying groups get in between FDA, HHS secretary, and the food groups, and they make sure that all these debates back and forth and delay a game gets them through the next 4 years until they get somebody else in there. But RFK knows what he's up to. And he's going to use his power and his ability to maneuver through government. And I think this is going to be one of his great contributions to the Trump team. I think it's part of the allure that brought in a lot of moms that normally didn't vote Republican. All right, listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Make sure you keep it here. If you want to write me, briankilmeade.com. Just click on Ask Brian.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your direction, where I imagine any moment we're going to see more pro-campus protests in Uptown New York City, right in Columbia and Barnard and who knows where else because people are so upset about the arrest of a Syrian-born Palestinian Hamas lover who's creating unrest in all these college campuses. Bottom of the hour, New York legend Joe Piscopo. Then we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney on FBN. The market right now is down again, 330 points, so we'll stay on top of that story before we get to Eli Cohanim, the former deputy envoy to combat anti-terrorism under President Trump, in studio. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
So I think that would be a very good signal to have the presidents together signing this deal. It's a really good deal, importantly for the American people as well as the Ukrainian people. It's a way for the American taxpayer to recoup some of their investment in Ukraine.
I hope so. That's part of it. But then it's going to see how serious the Russians are. And that is where we understand Steve Witkoff will be heading right after this meeting in Saudi Arabia today.
Number two.
The herd is really negative right now, and it's focused all on tariffs. We're getting good stuff coming for this economy and for the markets. And I think some of this is a sales job. They have to go out there and maybe stop talking about tariffs so much.
Why not? Economy's in flux. The market is rocked by recession fears and Trump tariffs. Why we should hold on tight and get ready for a restructuring of our economy that's going to make us more powerful in the long run. Meanwhile, President Trump's resident genius, Elon Musk, pays a big price for reining in our out-of-control budget.
Number one.
Now we're facing a horrifying reality that our own student has become a political prisoner here in the United States. We must not go down this authoritarian path one step further.
Really? How unbelievable is that? That's a Columbia professor standing up for the anti-Semitic protest in New York City, raging on college campuses across the country. That might have been okay under Joe Biden. It is not okay under Donald Trump. As we look at the backlash from the one upstart that we're going to be deporting, but a judge has stopped it until they can hear both sides on Wednesday. So let's bring in Ellie. Ellie, great to see you.
Great to be with you, Brian.
Your thoughts about the different tone of administrations with this campus unrest?
Well, the contrast between the Biden administration, which failed Jewish Americans for the 2 years.
And Senator Schumer, too.
Oh, Senator Schumer, please don't get me started. I'm so.
A Jewish American, the highest ranking in American political history.
Yeah, I mean, Senator Schumer has let down the Jewish people. And there's many, many of his constituents, Jewish or not Jewish, who are frankly shocked that he was also mostly silent throughout the Biden administration and all of the anti-Semitism that reared its ugly head since October 7th across this country, and especially in his own New York state and district. But getting back to the contrast, Brian, between the Biden administration and the Trump administration. So President Trump comes into office January 21st. 8 days later, he issues an executive order, which for the first time in American history brings all of the power of the federal government, brings all of the power of all federal agencies to tackle and, I believe, really just end the anti-Semitism that was allowed to fester and grow under Biden.
So we know this. They plan on major major demonstrations today after the arrest of this protester at Columbia. But it was organizing the ones against their sister school, Barnard. He is part of the Palestinian groups that cross-sect Palestinian youth movement, the City University. There's also a U.S. campaign for a Palestinian rights action group, others. Then we find out there's a direct tie with this group and the direct tie with Hamas because they've said it to the hostages that were being detained. They talked about and bragged about how they control the media and they control the college campuses.
Exactly right. And Brian, I have to tell you, this issue is very, very personal to me because I am a graduate of Barnard College and Columbia University gave me my diploma. It's my alma mater. So again, for 17 months, we've seen Columbia University be the epicenter of this hatred towards Jews, of intimidation and harassment towards its Jewish students, and really shutting down the ability of the entire campus community
right.
to gain an education. We're hearing more and more about this person, Mahmoud Khalil's ties, as you just mentioned, to Hamas. We've all seen the footage of him leading these campus activities. And just last week when there was a shutdown at Barnard College and Barnard's president chose to negotiate for over 7 hours with the students who were shutting down the campus in Milbank Hall, Khalil was the head of that so-called negotiation. But also there's more information coming out about him, Brian, where his group is advocating for, quote, the downfall of Western civilization. I think the Trump administration has information on him.
So I hope we get it out in court and we got to throw this guy out. Marco Rubio was presented with intelligence that determined that Khalil, who you're referring to, a Syrian-born Palestinian who received his graduate degree from Columbia in December, but still living on campus, was a threat to national security. So put it out there. And it's got to be more than him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we heard President Trump say yesterday, he put out a post on Truth Social, that Khalil is just the first of many to come. And I think that just makes sense. We've all, again, seen this pro-Hamas, anti-American, anti-Semitic thug movement all across the campuses of our country. And so it seems to me there's hundreds, if not thousands, of others. And Brian, I just want to drill down on one point, if I may. Democrats have now decided that they are going to make Khalil their poster child.
Good.
They they've started to come out. Right. Here's and there's a lot of disinformation going on. So let's be clear. Khalil came here on he's a foreign national. He's not a U.S. citizen. He doesn't have the rights of U.S. citizenship. He originally seems to have applied for a student visa and for green card status. And when you make those applications, there are questions that are asked of you. Now, if at the beginning he had indicated that he supports foreign terrorist organizations like Hamas, then he would not have been eligible for the visa, for the green card in the first place. So there's Democrats who are trying to make legal arguments, you know, outside of the court system for why we should keep Khalil here and how, you know, he has rights and this is anti-constitutional. But it's absolutely not. Again, if he had told the country from the beginning that he supports a foreign terrorist organization, he wouldn't have been here in the first place.
So listen to this. Columbia professor coming out for Khalil. Cut two.
Now we're facing a horrifying reality that our own student, a member of the Columbia community, has become a political prisoner here in the United States. This is a dismal moment in American history. We must not go down this authoritarian path one step further.
Who does he think he's talking to? Does he think he's trying to win me or you over or middle America over? He's got his Columbia faculty who's already, already signed on.
Brian, you know, this is a great indication of what's going on our campuses, universities, who is teaching our children. And I think most of us adults and the parents who are paying these high tuitions would be horrified to know the radicalism, the Marxism that is being taught to our children, that our children are literally being propagandized and brainwashed. And so some of these students who have taken to the campus quad, not to support Israel, the victims of October 7th, but to support the Hamas terrorists, is because of this radicalization that's going on in our campuses. And so the Trump administration steps that they've already taken within 50 days, right? They've already told Columbia that they are canceling $400 million of federal funds and grants, right, to Columbia. And Columbia stands to lose $5 billion of federal funding. Also, we see our newly sworn in Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, yesterday also making an announcement that there are going to be about 60 U.S. universities that are going to be investigated by Department of Ed for Title VI
Fantastic.
Violations.
And here's Ken Belkin, a constitutional law attorney, cut seven.
I think ultimately the federal government has broad discretion to revoke a green card. And under these circumstances, with an individual who might have been actively promoting the interests of Hamas on an American university campus, I think President Trump is in the right.
Okay, now let's move to what's happening over in Israel. They're going to go Doha and talk about, I guess, extending the first phase or starting the second phase. They made it clear to Steve Witkoff, to Hamas, they cannot be in control of Gaza. But what are your contacts in Israel saying we go from here? Because everybody wants the hostages out, but nobody wants to see Hamas in.
Yeah, and I think that we're getting there, Brian, right? You know, this is, again, President Trump inherited a world on fire with two wars on two continents. And he and his team, Steve Witkoff, Adam Bowler, everybody, they are working so hard to accomplish the two things you just said. One is we want to get every hostage out of Gaza that we can get out, including our American hostages, every live hostage, also the dead bodies that deserve a proper burial, right? So that is the first priority. And then everybody is clear. Hamas will not have a role in Gaza in the future. They are going to be either given the opportunity to disarm and, you know, give themselves up and get out of Gaza peacefully, or they will have, you know, potential other options on the table.
So what do you think about Egypt, Qatar, Saudi Arabia coming in with an international peacekeeping force into Gaza? It seems as though the Israelis are not happy about that. The U.S. wasn't head over heels. I don't know how it was possible for us to buy Gaza, but it made everyone think. And everyone thought, we gotta really come up with something.
Yeah, Brian, listen, President Trump's plan, I think, is actually still the best logical plan because what he...
You mean the U.S. takes over Gaza?
Well, but here's what he said first. He said that first you need to have the Gaza population given the opportunity to leave Gaza. Now, I have to say, Brian, it's the only population in the world that when there is a war going on, right, and it's uninhabitable. Witkoff went in person, he came back and he reported 10 to 15 years to rebuild Gaza, right? So the Gaza population are the only population in the world who are demanded that they have to stay in this war zone, and you ask the reason why. It's so that they are political pawns. It's so that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict should fester forever, that there should never actually be a peaceful resolution. As long as you keep people in this uninhabitable war zone,
yep.
you're keeping a population who is propagandized to hate Jews and to continue to, you know, participate in terror activity. So President Trump says, no, hey, let's think out of the box. Let's allow these people, these civilians, to get out of this war zone. I mean, it's actually the most humanitarian step that anyone can take. So you allow the Gazans to leave. Right. Then he says that Israel should take care of the security situation. And we're talking about demolishing the whatever is left right now in Gaza. You know, again, Witkoff has also spoken about all of the bombs and all of the tunnels and all the terror infrastructure that poses threats to any civilians who want to live there. So you got to clear all of that out. And then President Trump says maybe in a third phase, when all of that is done, the U.S. would participate in a beneficiary way in this gorgeous coastal enclave that Gaza could be.
I know. It's got people thinking anyway. Lastly, Adam Bowler, who's in charge of hostage rescues, met with Hamas officials, and it looks like Ron Dermer and others in the Netanyahu administration are upset by this because they said he kind of did it on his own, although it looks like Catherine Levitt said he did it with the permission of President Trump. How is that playing inside Israel?
You know, what Adam Bowler told us himself is that he got a phone call from Ron Dermer, and it seems that Ron Dermer has expressed some Israeli hesitation about the United States having direct talks with Hamas. Now, what I want to remind our audience is that before the Trump administration was having direct talks with Hamas, it was Qatar and Egypt that were acting as so-called intermediaries. And they have had this, you know, for 16 months, they've been the intermediaries. And for a long, long time in that 16-month period, there were periods where there was complete stall. There was no movement forward. Yep. We didn't get hostages out, right? The Hamas was still in Gaza, running Gaza. So you know what, President Trump, he might be interested in having his own people have direct talks, right? Nobody is fooled by Hamas. Adam Bowler said that he understands who Hamas is. And I think that everyone needs to give the Trump administration a chance to negotiate.
Would the Israelis be upset to a degree if we just walk out with the American and they have theirs left behind, including the bodies of their citizens?
Brian, President Trump, we saw this very emotional moment where the freed hostages were in the White House last week, and he listened to their stories. And they, you know, they were telling him that the only reason that they were freed was because of President Trump. And President Trump has said over and again that he's dedicated to getting all the hostages released. So I just don't think that that's what's going to happen. I don't think the American plan is that we get our Americans out and then we.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to be in. But I think Netanyahu knows America. This administration for 4 years has his back. And I think also Iran knows it. Houthi rebels know it. Hezbollah knows it. And Hamas knows it. And now they have the weapons that were being held back by Joe Biden. So it's their turn to get aggressive. Ellie, great to see you in person. 2 days in a row.
Yes,
right. I appreciate it. Ellie Cohanan, great to see you.
Thank you so
much.
When
we come back, we'll take your calls. Bottom of the hour, Joe Piscopo. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya guselkumab can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So I think that would be a very good signal to have the presidents together signing this deal. It's a really good deal. importantly for the American people, Carly, as well as the Ukrainian people. It's a way for the American taxpayer to recoup some of their investment in Ukraine, hundreds of billions of dollars over the last 3 years, and to provide us with materials that Ukraine has, in very large quantities.
So that's just it. And there'll be this is what's going to come out of the meetings that are taking place right now in Saudi Arabia. They're going to have a minerals deal, but that's not going to be the biggest deal. They're going to say, these are the confidence measures. We're going to leave there. They're going to tell us openly, where they're going to agree on confidence measures that Russia and Ukraine would do. For example, no flights, no drones, no energy targeting. Okay? Something with the Black Sea. Some areas, incremental or major, in which to show that they sincerely want to de-escalate this war, even though they're not going to stop on a dime. But I also think it's important to point out that it's the Russians. They've said nothing but being a hardliners, and they've had private conversations between Vladimir Putin and Trump. Trump's optimistic he can get something. I'm optimistic Trump is right, but I don't have any faith in Vladimir Putin. Listen to the Lithuania defense minister, what he said to our own Lucas Tomlinson, Cut 29.
Diplomacy in general is really a very important tool whenever we talk about international agreements. But all the sides need to be willing. So far, the willingness of Russia to stop their war of invasion, their war of aggression, has not been visible. If it happens, then, well, we'll see. In my opinion, the only efficient diplomacy with Russia is like, Al Capone that said that the only good negotiations is when you have a gun on the table? So that's probably the kind of diplomacy that would work with Russia.
I 100% agree. We'll see what happens. They have to have no other option. And my fear is if they don't agree to international troops, in 4 more years, we're going to be right back here. Wait for Trump to get out, whatever happens. They'll just find an opening and go. And if they get a great deal and get all this land with all this rare earth, China's going to say, yeah, it was a tough 3 years. But in the end, I'll take Taiwan, put up with some international consternation. But the rest of the world needs our products. They need our economy. They'll be back. We don't need anything from Russia. They don't make anything that we want. They got oil and gas. They're not even good at pumping it. They can't even farm. They lost 1 million people, roughly, to a brain drain. Because people say, with this country at war, with the mass drafting of eligible people, I'm not staying here. Good luck with that.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Stevie, what the hell are we beating around the bush for? This is 1982. Let's get right to the point, huh? Here, take it from the tops. Swing it, Stevie, with a bounce, baby. You are black. I am white, life's an Eskimo pie. Let's take a bite. That was groovy thinking, Lincoln, when you set them free. We all know cats are the same, Maine to Mexico. Good, bad, guys and chicks.
I am dark and you are light.
You are blind as a bat and I have sight. Side by side you are my amigo. Negro, let's not fight.
All right, there's that guy with the remarkably talented, diverse Joe Piscopo, the author of Average Joe, the memoirs of a blue-collar entertainer, and that was just one of the funny excerpts from his years at SNL. Joe, welcome back. Congratulations on the book and your career.
Thank you, Brian. So I call with great respect, my friend. I can't believe you're doing 3 beautiful hours on television and running on the radio, man. 300 stations around the country. Hardest working man in show business, ladies and gentlemen.
No, Brian, kill me. But you are actually in show business. You can do everything. I mean, stand up, act. You can do impressions, and you can sing. And you do every morning.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's so true. You know what? I just got back from Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I went there and we did a couple shows and book signings. And I know you travel around too. And Brian, you know what's great is how great the country is. I mean, I came back on Sunday. I ran in. I did my Sundays with Sinatra show, and I run on the air on AM 970 in the morning, like this morning. And I just feel everybody's so nice. It seems like we always try to – I always like your positive attitude, Brian, because they try to divide us, you know. But I love it. I love – I go meeting people, and yes, I'll do the Frank Sinatra impression. Yes, we'll go do some jokes, and we'll sing some tunes, you know. But it's always great to meet people from around this great country. I'm so always – oh, it just pumps me up, my friend, you know. So that's what the book's about. All, you know, it's a survival story, but it's also about the goodness of this great country. When, Brian Kilmeade.
I know. I want to play another clip from SNL. They look back at 50 years. Here's Steve Martin talking about – well, let's listen.
Good evening. And welcome to the 50th anniversary of Saturday Night Live. I'm Steve Martin, Saturday Night Live's newest diversity hire. And what a thrill it is to be here. When I heard that SNL wanted to do an anniversary special, I literally wanted to leap into the air. And the only reason I didn't is because at the time I was wearing a short skirt with no underwear. Now, I can't believe I even made it here in time. It was only a few days ago that Lauren told me I was doing the monologue, and I was actually vacationing on a friend's boat down in the Gulf of Steve Martin, and I finally...
So they're having fun with... I think it's actually a very good sense of humor. That's like less of an attack, more of a nuance to the humor on the 50th anniversary. Were you there?
Yeah, I was. As a matter of fact, I went to the we did all year long, and we couldn't talk about it. We did a lot of video, and they said, don't say anything about it. So we did a lot of film. So they brought me in for all the film retrospectives about the music, about the casts. And it really is – it's great. I think it's on Peacock, a lot of the documentaries. And then they said, okay, now you're going to come into the SNL homecoming special with the music. Jimmy Fallon hosted it, and they had – Nirvana was there, and Jack White, and Scherer actually stole the show, Brian. I mean, you know, it was like amazing at Radio City Music Hall. And they gave me these great seats right up front, and they put us on camera, and it was great. And as soon as they were treating me so nice, I know that I wasn't going to have 1 second on the SNL 50 broadcast on Sunday night. I just knew it, you know, because
I know.
I went in, you know what I mean? I went in, they were treating me too nice, man. I went, and yeah, listen, I'm just happy to be there. You know me. I'm a working stiff. Again, is what the book Average Joe is about, just a journeyman's life in entertainment and loving every second of it. And we went in. But then on the essence, the good thing is I took my daughters. So I took Alexandra. They had to decide who wants to go to Radio City, who wants to go to the SNL 50. Allie wanted to go to Radio City, and she saw an incredible show. And then, but I got to tell you, with the divide that we're talking about, I'm walking down the aisle at Radio City after the show, and Allie says, Dad, there's Tom Hanks. So I say, you want to meet? Would you like to meet him? Because I know him from seeing him. I slow my pace walking down the aisle, and I go, and I catch Tom's eye. He stops, Brian, he stops the whole show. Everybody's around him. This was after the show. And he goes, Joe Piscopo. Makes a whole thing. Joe Piscopo. I said, Tom, how you doing? I meet my daughter. Another Piscopo. Oh, my God. And Hank says to me, Hank goes, Joe, no disrespect, but you're starting to look like Frank Sinatra. He goes like that. It was just really, it was
see,
funny.
I thought you scared me, Joe, because you know how he, to the left he is. And I thought he was going to embarrass you in front of your daughters. But it's, he has so much respect for you.
I got to tell you, thank you, Brian. I thought the same exact thing. Could not have been nicer. Paul Rudd's great. Paul and I were born in Passaic, New Jersey. Adam Sandler is just magic, man. And Allie goes, there's that. And he said, and they said, everybody, cut to the SNL 50, if I can, Brian. And I knew each other. We know each other long enough. So tell me if I'm talking too much for you, man. But it's like we went to SNL 50. We go in now. Olivia wants to go to the SNL 50. We go in. And everybody who was anybody there, I saw Eddie. I caught up with Eddie. I gave Eddie Murphy a big hug. And I said, you know what, Ed, after all these years, thank you for that ride, man. What a wild time. I looked at him. He goes, yeah. He goes, I know. And then we were chatting about it. How many kids? Eddie's got 10 kids. I got two grandkids. And he was so excited because he just made his last alimony payment. And we could identify with that, you know. I know. Listen, all those years later. And then we go in and Billy Murray was there. Billy, can I get a picture? So then they don't, and I know I'm a, I voted for Trump. I make no apologies. I'm a Trump guy, and it's way, I'm a conservative. And of course, so they put us up in the Bob Uecker section, you know, of the bleachers for the show, you know. I walked in, I said, oh, I must be in the front row, you know, so they put us up there. And so now we're up there, and it's after the show. And you got, and I'm just happy to be there. Rob Schneider's up there. A couple of us are up there. I understand. So after the show, everybody runs to the stage to get on the good nights. I didn't run to the stage. I stayed back, but I did go down later after we went off the air. I walked down. There's Scarlett Johansson. And Colin Jost was so nice to me. Joe, how are you? We talked a little bit. I said, Scarlett, can I take a pic? Can I have a picture of you and my daughter? She could not have been more gracious. Jack Nicholson is there. Brian Nicholson. Wow. I said, Jack, you're a Jersey guy. How you doing, Joe? You know, it was Jack Nicholson, man. And it was cool. Now, and there's Ryan Reynolds. And Adam Sandler took another picture. Everybody's anybody. Then I feel somebody next to me. And I look. And it's Robert De Niro. Now, to your point, I'm afraid to say
here
anything
we go.
To Bobby
here
De Niro. Listen, I'm afraid. So I walk away like I'm a, like I go, I don't want to get into it. Not now. Not with my daughter here. I walk away. So everybody's nice as nice can be. I went to see Johnny Pinto, the number one camera guy in Studio 8H. He was legend. I'm more excited to see Johnny than anybody, you know, from Brooklyn after all those years. Walking out of 8H. I'm by myself. I see Olivia's right behind me, and we're about to go to the after party. I look, well, I'm walking step in step with Robert De Niro again. So I look at him. He looks at me. He says to me, hey, Joe, how you doing? How you doing? You all right? You all right? How you doing? Like that. And I go, Bobby, I said, and I just went, I said, you know, that was very funny what you did with Rachel Dratch. You had to take in the camera. You waited. The beat was perfect, by the way. You're great. Thanks. And he went, oh, yeah, thanks. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. I'm waiting, Brian. I'm waiting for him to go after me on the Trump thing. Nothing. And I go like this. I go, we have a mutual friend. I love the guy. He gives you all the credit for making him who he is. That's very nice. Thank you, Joe. It's very nice. Then you're doing all right? You're doing all right? I go, yes, sir. Like that. He stops. He looks. We're face to face. It's me and De Niro. He takes his hands. He puts his hands on my arms. He gives me an Italian kiss on the cheek. Good to see you, Joe. You take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. You hear what I'm saying? That divide is BS, I think. You know, if he doesn't like Trump, and if it is true the way he acts.
Oh, it's true.
I don't care. Yeah, but listen, it was all put aside, and I think everybody's got to stop with the crazy, Brian. You're one of the nicest guys in the world, and we love you, man. And that's the way everybody should be, no matter what your politics.
But I'm not crazy.
You know.
I think Trump is really good president. I don't think he's perfect.
Absolutely.
Reagan wasn't perfect. Kennedy wasn't perfect. But we call it. We like talking to people about it. We spend all our days reading about it, using our contacts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I don't hate people that don't vote for somebody. But real quick,
exactly.
on average show, what did you discover? Real quick, I only got 90 seconds. What did you discover in you researching your own life and having to reflect on it? And when you wrote the book Average Joe,
I'm a survivor, and you got to survive, and you can reinvent yourself. And you can't enjoy the journey. That's what I discovered. I dig the journey, man. I'm a working stiff entertainer. I ain't no big star. You know what? I'm working. By the grace of God, I'm working, and I'm working in a business that I love. I'm doing radio, love radio, doing stage. We do all facets of entertainment.
Gotcha.
And I'm working, and it's the journey that I understand. And I'm more grateful now than ever before.
And,
I'm surviving.
You always act like you're for your lad. Every show is the best, and every stage appearance is the best. And your audience gets that. Thanks so much, Joe Piscopo.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm going to go on the air with Stuart Varney on FBN in a matter of moments. We're just also watching more protests today. It looks like there's going to be, in about an hour, there's supposed to be massive college walkouts of classrooms in protest of the Palestinian Syrian that was detained yesterday. A judge says they get a hearing today. Hopefully we'll be able to support the troublemaker once and for all. Also, a short time ago, the Speaker of the House came out and talked about the chances of avoiding a government shutdown and pointed out some of the things Democrats have said in the past about a government shutdown and how it just is bad for the American people if that is in fact the case. When you have a clean CR, continuing resolution to fund the government at current levels, why wouldn't you sign off on it?
Hey, Brian, Whoopi Goldberg used transgender TikToker Dylan Mulvaney to defend men playing in women's sports. You got to watch this. Roll it.
If you don't know anything about our bodies, you don't know how it works. Mm-hmm. So when you come in and you say, oh, you know, these are men, you know,
competing against women,
you're assuming that the women are weak and just can't do anything except right here. Have you seen female athletes? They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what's going on or why this is an issue.
Brian, you better come into this because I think most Americans disagree with her on this particular issue.
Stuart, that line in Billy Madison, I can't remember it verbatim, but we're all dumber having heard that. I mean, have you ever heard a stupider statement in your life? We don't understand. We understand a woman's bodies. Have you seen some women? We've seen women try to compete against men. They can't. Yeah. That's the way it is in sports, in tennis, in golf, in football. Baseball, basketball. So when you put a man who wants to be a woman in a woman's sport, he will dominate if he's athletic, and that's the deal. Dylan Mulvaney, who seems to play a woman on TV and write a book about it, she says, listen, I don't know anything about sports, but other people said it should happen. And other people on the Democratic side, when looked at this 80-20 issue, where 8, and I imagine it's higher, of every 10 people looking at us right now know that there's no place for a trans man in women's sports. They yet, when Democrats are asked, they go, well, it never happens. Well, it does happen enough. And if it happens to your daughter, where they train and they lose because somebody decides to join in a wrong gender sport, then you will be affected by you. If you get run over in soccer by a trans man, you will know it. And if that's your daughter, I'm pretty sure you're not going to say, well, statistically, it's not likely to happen. It will just continue to happen unless it's stopped. And if that's Democrats true. And people like Whoopi Goldberg want to give half-wit comments about why trans men belong in women's sports, have at it.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Let's get real more serious here. Protests against Elon Musk have turned violent. Tesla dealerships, charging stations, they've been set on fire. Musk has become public enemy number one. And, Brian, I don't think that's right.
Go to Doge.gov and just take a look at what they're
exactly.
doing. His yep. team of 100 to 200 are going in, looking at contracts, looking at dead checks, making people put their name on checks and an address to where it's heading, well, making people accountable for what they're spending, reining in the pandemic spending for one reason, not to get more rocket ships in the sky, not to get more tunnels in the ground, not to make more chips in the head or electric cars on the road. He said to Donald Trump, I heard him on his own interview with Trump, I'd love to help you out with government efficiency. And it was so much worse than he thought. And as he cuts these programs and talks about the bloated federal workforce, now people want to make him enemy number one. And I caution everyone, don't get caught up in what the media is saying, what New York and Los Angeles and Washington say. Outside of those that web of disinformation, the American people stand. And I think right. most people are in his corner. And I think if you're about to buy a car and are thinking electric car, do yourself a favor. Go get a Tesla. Not only are they the best car, but there's charging stations. He didn't ask the government to do it. He did it himself. The other ones you're going to be driving around a little while for because Joe Biden was in charge of that. So if you are looking for a car and you're upset, like many people are, like I am, about the way he's been treated, go get a Tesla.
Brian, hold on. So I've got to get this in. You celebrated Texas Tuesday on Fox and Friends this morning. You seemed hesitant, Brian.
Yes.
But they got you looking like a real Texan by the end of it. Watch this.
Brian gets to celebrate yes. Texas Tuesday with his first
look
pair
at,
of cowboy
boots. Look
Tacomas.
At my jeans. Look at my jeans. Here you go.
All right. Now it's good,
it
Brian.
All right.
Okay, they said it would never happen. He put on boots.
This is my version.
Lawrence,
what do I need to know? I'm an urban cowboy.
One hand
up.
There we go.
Okay.
All right.
Wow, look at this.
Slowly whip it up. Slowly whip it up.
You look good, Brian. You tell me, how long did you last on the bull?
Well, what happened is they were very kind to me. The guy just went around a circle, but I would have lasted 20, 30 minutes because I got incredible balance. I am very natural on wild animals, but unfortunately, we were up against Bill Hemmer and Dana Perino. They wouldn't give me any of their time. Not like you, Stuart. If you were following me, you would have gave me a few minutes.
Watch out for those horns, Brian. They can be lethal.
Right.
Brian Kilmeade, everyone. He's a good man. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, still ahead, Jimmy Failor. All right, 1-866-408-7669. So what we're doing on, just to explain that a little further, on Fox and Friends, Lawrence Jones, my lovely co-host, is from Texas. He said, let's make it Texas Tuesday. So we wore boots. And then Ainsley and Steve wore boots. And then the whole staff started wearing boots. And then Lexi started wearing boots. And they want me to wear boots. But here's the problem. And I'm wearing jeans right now, if you're watching the feed, is that I'm not from Texas. And if I dress like I'm from Texas, I feel inauthentic. So for the last 2 months, I've been holding out on Texas Tuesday. And now people are sending pictures in with their toddlers in Texas. Their toddlers in boots. And it got out of control. So today, I was able to put on boots that were probably very expensive boots, and I gave them right back because I should not be wearing boots. I'm from New York. I live on Long Island, and people will see me and say, "And why is that New Yorker wearing boots?" And that's the inauthenticity we'll have trouble shaking.
I think you're overthinking it.
You think so?
I do. I think a lot of people are wearing the boots. I think also, you know, for men, you only see the bottom part. You're not really seeing the boot part.
But
just
then,
the
weren't, isn't Trump going all over DeSantis because he was wearing boots to make himself look taller or something?
I mean, he was, but was that true? I mean, does Lawrence need the extra height? I don't think so.
Well, Lawrence from Texas. That matters. You know, you have to, if you're going to fight crime, you need to do it in boots. If you're going to be from Texas, you need to wear boots.
Lawrence fights crime?
Yeah. I'm going to fight crime.
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. A lot going on today. At the bottom of the hour, Jason and Erica Redmond will be with us, the authors of Mission Invincible Marriage. Jason is a veteran. He got wounded in battle, but he is an American hero. He's written a bestseller called The Trident. And now what he and his wife have gotten through as he's gotten back home is in a brand new book. So I hope you guys all check it out. Bhatia Unger Sargon is here, an outstanding journalist, author of Second Class. And now you're with Free Press, right?
Yes.
As well as?
And with Compact Magazine.
So where do we get your columns? On the Free Press?
Free Press and in Compact, yeah.
All right. So we subscribe to you.
Yeah, sure.
Is that true? Substack. Is that like, once you go to the Free Press, you get that?
Yeah, Compact Magazine and the Free Press, and you can find my writings there. Yeah.
All right, great. Mm-hmm. So great to see you, Bhatia.
Thank you. Thanks.
Top of the hour, guess what's going to happen? Nationwide protests to salute an activist that was detained and hopefully will be exported right out of our country for his actions on campus. His name is Mahmoud Khalil. And right now a judge says, hold on a second, we'll have you on trial on Wednesday. But in an homage to him, there's going to be unrest on campuses across the country. How's that going to play?
You know, this is one of those 90-10 issues where most Americans, including a lot of Americans who are very sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinians, are just really disgusted with how these campus protests unfolded.
Yep.
They really didn't like the harassment. They didn't like the occupation of buildings, trespassing. There were a lot of agitators there who were not students. The encampments, you know, all the stuff that gets in the way of a lot of students who are there to learn. So I think that this is not going to play very well for the Democrats. Now, we have to see, did this guy actually commit crimes? You know, if he was just there speaking, you could have a free speech argument. If he was actually committing crimes, occupying, trespassing illegally, destruction of property, preventing students from getting to class, preventing the dean from accessing the bathroom. I saw a video. If he was involved in any of that, then we have a real case here of somebody who broke the law, who was, I believe, actually, it's been reported that he actually entered the country illegally, overstayed a student visa, and then got a green card and married an American citizen. So it's going to be a really interesting case. I can't believe that there are Democrats out there who never once called for the release of the hostages, the Israeli hostages in Hamas captivity, who are out there demanding the release of this person. But it's going to be a really interesting test case. Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't hear about the Americans still being held and all the others that have been killed, their bodies being withheld and still in captivity. But we got to make sure that this graduate student who graduated that should not be on campus housing can still put a mask over his face and protest. So we understand, too, that part of the when last week at Barnard College, when they were taking over buildings, they would hand out flyers that said Hamas media office, glorifying what they went out and supporting of terror. And they also had the Al-Aqsa flood as one of their narratives. The Al-Aqsa flood is how the Palestinians and Hamas
views the October 7th attack. So they are glorifying that horrible day in history.
Yeah, it's very clear that for a lot of people, especially in these elite campuses, they really are fans of Hamas and Hezbollah. There were flags there and so forth. And again, there are a lot of Americans who feel sympathy for the Palestinians who are not on board with these elitists at these elite universities who are paying $100,000 a year to go to these schools. And what they think they're there to do is to protest and have this literature out there. Now, again, when we're talking about American citizens, they have First Amendment rights to like Hamas and to support Hamas and to say disgusting things about how they support terrorism. That is their First Amendment right. But when you're dealing with somebody who is an immigrant here illegally, they do not have those same rights. They're not covered by those same laws. And when there is material support for terrorism, then of course, this is a felony.
So Marco Rubio was presented with the intelligence on Khalil, a Syrian-born Palestinian who received his graduate degree from Columbia. And he says he's a threat to national security. So he's been detained right now out of state. My sense is it's not just him, but this U.S. District Judge, Jesse Furman, said Khalil is to remain in the U.S. to preserve the court's jurisdiction. So we'll see what happens, because Trump is going to be relentless. He says this is just the beginning. And I think it's also worthy bringing up that Jeff Lax, who you might know, a professor at City College, conservative, he says that hostages have been talking, saying that they were told by their captors, the ones that are lucky enough to be released, that there's a direct connection between the American protests on American campuses and their cause. They said that they control the weather. Their goal is to turn the West against Israel and us, and they've infected college campuses. They were bragging about it.
Yeah, it's really horrible when you think about it. And it's not just that these are, you know, young people with absolutely deplorable and disgusting viewpoints. It's that that degree is going to ensure them access into the elites and into the American dream in a way that working class people who don't have these fancy degrees, who can't pay $100,000 a year for one of these stupid degrees, cannot. And I think that is what President Trump is actually trying to do right now in the markets, is to reorient the economy of the United States away from what it has been for 50 years, which is an upward funnel of wealth from working class people, people who work with their hands for a living, into the pockets of those student protesters who are out there with the most despicable points of view. That's what all of the tariffs are about. That's what the immigration controls are about. It is about reorienting the economy to reward hard work and the American working class, and not these godless elites with their despicable views.
So you want to hear some of those despicable views if you're not angry enough? Here's an undergrad, Pearson Lund, Cut 5.
Who determines what the illegal protest is? Because all protests are going to be deemed against the state to some extent, or against governments to some extent, so they're always going to be illegal. That's just simply saying all protest is effectively banned, or all protest I don't like is effectively banned.
When you have a protest that affects a religious person going to school, like it's a Jewish person going to school, when you take over a building, when you curse and attack cops, I believe you're opening yourself up to deportation. And I know people that have green cards. They feel like they're walking on eggshells. They know one mistake, a DWI, shoplifting, anything that they do, they know that's it. They're done. They're finished. This is not somebody worried about getting deported.
It's so interesting, Brian. A friend of mine called me. She was very upset because somebody that we both know had been picked up by ICE and was being deported. And she was saying to me, this is so terrible. This is, you know, a law-abiding, lovely person. I happen to know that this is a person who was facing both a DUI and a domestic violence charge, who had hit his wife. She happened to not know that. So she thought this is just a lovely person who's being deported. And I happen to know, just by happenstance, the backstory here of what's actually happening. And the fact that the Democrats are out there defending criminals again, that their heart bleeds for criminals. They are out there, Kathy Hochul saying, you're not going to take a single... Tom Holman's rounding up criminals, violent criminals. Why couldn't they just say, you know what? This is something as Americans we can all get behind. No, they have their heart just bleeds for the criminal element again and again.
But don't you want to follow what's going on, where this money's coming from? How would anyone say to themselves, if you're growing up a New York kid or in Missouri, how do you go, you know, I still feel for the Palestinians. It's so good to feel for the oppressed. But where does that come from? Where does a groundswell of support come from, people that you've never met, that you haven't studied the history. You can't decide any of the complex history. It's not something you pick up in a flyer. You have to understand the origin of where what happened from World War I to World War II, or a sense of what happened at the Holocaust. How do you end up on the other side of the Holocaust? Here is Senator Josh Hawley. Cut nine. He thinks it's time for an investigation.
We should absolutely follow the money, and it ought to be traced all the way back to its source. And this is why I say, Jesse, the left has gotten by with this for years. This is a great project for the Department of Justice, and they ought to look at all of it. Who's funding these attacks? Who's funding the campus protests? Which, by the way, all of these campus protests, they're all organized, they're coordinated, they're funded. We ought to blow the lid off of that as well.
So I would love to see the Department of Justice go pursue that, because we were great at that after 9/11. We're blowing off so many of the foundations who were nesting in our country. We're good at it. We could follow this money.
Yeah, we know that Qatar, for example, gives billions of dollars to American institutions of higher education. Of course, Qatar being the number one supporter of Hamas, big, big state supporter of terrorism. Joe Biden designated them as a major non-NATO ally in 2021. I don't understand what we got out of that. We certainly didn't get a single hostage released until Donald Trump showed up. And you see those hostages now who were released coming out and saying, thank you, President Trump. I would still be in Hamas captivity if not for you. So we got nothing out of that. I don't understand why we have an airbase in Doha that should be moved immediately to Saudi Arabia in an effort to normalize relations there. We get nothing out of this except the infection of young people with terrorist ideology that comes straight through these universities.
It's so interesting, and it's something that's got to be pursued. Here's CBS has a totally different take. They have a sympathetic view of Mahmoud Khalil. Cut 11.
Khalil's attorneys say their client was wrongfully detained, saying federal agents incorrectly thought he was in the U.S. on a student visa, then arrested him anyway after learning he was a lawful permanent resident and were preparing to deport him until a judge temporarily blocked the order. Ramsey Qasim is a member of Khalil's legal team.
Department of State and the Secretary of State do not have the power to revoke green cards. Only an immigration court can do that. Mr. Khalil has committed no crime.
Fellow protesters who know him deny Khalil did anything wrong.
Well, how did you meet him?
Being in the encampment, I met him several times, and he's just a very sweet guy, soft-spoken. I see him equally supporting Palestinian students, Arab students, Jewish students.
And student protesters told us Khalil's arrest has already had a chilling effect on free speech.
We've been really over-monitoring ourselves and our speech right now. Trying our best to just make sure it's not hurting any of our peers who are immigrants in any capacity.
Liars. Number one, you know that he was walking up to Jewish students, making sure they're okay. Did you see that at all with this guy or any of that leadership? So they're trying to paint this guy as a victim.
Did you hear that last woman, though? She said, we're trying to make sure none of our speech hurts immigrants in any way. Like, what about your fellow students who you've been hurting for so long? Like, no, their whole orientation is it's this woke ideology that's based on powerful, powerless. If you're viewed as the less powerful, you're inherently virtuous, even if you're a supporter of a terrorist organization. Now, again, we don't know yet if this guy broke any laws. We're going to find out very soon because there's going to be a court, and I think it's going to be followed very closely. We'll find out, did he break laws? And that's what this is all going to hang on.
Right, but a couple of things. If you are creating an organization that creates unrest on the streets of New York City and throughout college campuses, I mean, right there, as one of the organizers, I think you're subjected to arrest. You're actually putting people out there. I mean, and you're actually using your ability to organize in your context, we know, from maybe his home in Syria or beyond, to go do this. So I hope President Trump cracks down. But you believe this is not going to play to the Democrats' advantage,
no,
even though they're more likely to run to his side.
No, and it's amazing. Like, you know, like I said before, you have these Democratic organization and Democrats who never once called for the release of the hostages out there demanding that this person be released. You know, they're really showing their cards. They're showing their hand once again and picking the losing side. And you know what? They just keep doing that again and again and again.
So when we come back, Bhatia, we are going to take a look at the economy. The market's down again 400 points roughly after being down 900 yesterday. And President Trump's answer, I'm putting tariffs on Canada. So we'll see how that goes. And the fact that he didn't run away from saying it could be a recession, that spooked the market just a little bit. But you say, stay the course, Mr. President. Mm-hmm. Don't move.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Definitely not anything Alberta would do. We are not at all interested in cutting off the supply of energy. We're not at all interested in tariffing the export of energy. In fact, we want a tariff-free relationship, and we want to double the amount of oil and gas that we send down to the United States. Because every additional barrel that we send to the U.S. keeps prices stable for American consumers, but it also allows American producers to export it internationally. So that's the kind of partnership that we've had in the past. And I think that we can continue to have that strong partnership in the future.
So the problem is, and that is Danielle Smith, who's the premier of Alberta, Canada, different from another part of Canada called Ontario, where Doug Ford, who's the premier there, I think that's the right title, premier, yeah, premier there, decided to hit 25% tariffs on three states, Michigan, Minnesota, and New York, on electricity. Evidently, the lines traveled through there. With me right now is Batya Unger Sargon. So the president's responded by giving Batya more tariffs onto Canada, steel and aluminum, up to 50%. So the war is on.
Absolutely. From Donald Trump's point of view, tariffs accomplish three very important goals. The first is he cannot stand to see the United States treated like a patsy. And that's basically the situation we've been in. India has 20% tariffs on us. Like, how is that okay? We are getting treated like patsies across a number of different industries and a number of different countries. That's number one. He wants to use tariffs in order to equalize those relationships. Number two, he wants to generate a lot of revenue. He wants to get rid of the income tax, he said at one point, and replace it with tariffs. He wants that money. He wants us to be making a lot of money. And the third thing he's using tariffs as is a very big stick to accomplish other goals, like stopping fentanyl, stopping illegal immigration. It is a great way to bring other countries to their knees and force them to comply with things that they should be doing anyway, but for some reason don't think that they have to. So you have these three goals that are accomplished with this one thing, this one maneuver, this one mechanism. And I think overall, the entire approach of this administration is going to be the approach that President Trump took in his first administration, which was to reorient the economy away from being a massive upward funnel of wealth into the pockets of the elites from the working class back to the working class so the people who work the hardest in this country can achieve the American dream. And of course, the elites are going to hate this. They hate tariffs. They hate when you cut off their supply of illegal slave labor coming through the southern border. They're going to be very angry. And that's what you're seeing in the stock market. And what I would just say to that is stay the course. Hold the line. Donald Trump is giving a masterclass in how to create an economy around love of neighbor and love of country that's going to get us back to those great days in the 70s where the largest share of the GDP was in the working and middle class. Our middle class is destroyed because of these trade policies and immigration policies that were embraced by both parties until President Trump showed up and said, no more. The American worker deserves to achieve the American dream.
Batya, the other thing would be is if the economy does slump and the inflation does go up, the positive would be interest rates come down. And right now, the housing market is frozen. No one's leaving 3% interest rates. Even if, well, it's time for the upscale down. No, I'm not leaving now. How does it make any sense? So if you could get those interest rates down, that would unfreeze that. The other thing is, I think that when the president can get his tax reform back and reconfirmed, along with the spending reorientation, which is one big, beautiful bill in the spring, then we really have a sense of what the Trump economy looks like.
Absolutely. And it's really important to remember that those tax cuts were not just for the wealthy. Working and middle class people got a much higher percentage tax cut than the rich. So, of course, the money you get from a billionaire getting a 1% tax cut is more money. But for a working class person who gets a 20% tax cut, that's really significant.
That gets me so angry when they say tax cuts for billionaires. That
nonsense.
Is just, yeah, and people know that. The ones who got the biggest increase, their incomes went up 16%, was middle class. Mm-hmm. Batya, great to see you. Batya Unger Sargon, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Jason, Erica Redmond next.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to Bhatia for coming by. We're monitoring a bunch of stories, one of which is, are we going to have a government shutdown? There's a clean CR. Is it going to pass the House? Already, they could only have a two-vote margin for the Republicans. Already, Tom Massie says, I'm not going to vote for it. Forget it, unless I have a lobotomy. Really? I mean, has this guy ever been on a team before in his life? If you have generally, if you're happy to be in the majority and you have not been in the minority, and you don't make a counter proposal to what you would do, but you just want to be a no, I find that just indefensible. And we'll see if it gets through, if everyone votes together. Nancy Pelosi used to be able to whip her cast together. I don't think Jeffries can, but we'll see if Johnson can. And then we'll see if it gets to the Senate, where you need 60 votes. With me in studio is Jason and Erica Redmond. Jason, you've been on before, yeah. And we always love having you. In fact, I think the last time I was on the road, I feel like you caught up to me, I was on the road. It might have been Oklahoma. I'm not sure. Allison, you might remember. But the author, you and Erica are authors of a brand new book called Mission Invincible Marriage. So first off, is it the challenge of being a Navy SEAL on multiple missions that you can't talk about and keeping a relationship going? Is that foundationally what you wanted to convey in this?
We wanted to convey so often in the protector community, fire, military, and law enforcement, we're mission-focused, and there reaches a point where it becomes either or. I can be married, or I can be a protector. And so often that nexus point, especially in our community, becomes why they divorce, and happens 60-70% in law enforcement and fire also. And it doesn't have to be that way. There is a way to balance it. Eric and I are living proof of that in a community that has, you know, 90% divorce, wounded warrior, same.
Erica, when did you meet? Was he already serving? He was already serving in the military?
He was. He was already serving. I really didn't have a lot of military influence. I didn't know many people. He was training in Fort Knox, and they would come into the city. They would come into Louisville, Kentucky. And, from there, we started the long-distance relationship and, you know, traveled back and forth for about a year and a half before I moved to Virginia Beach.
And what did you find to be the biggest challenge of keeping the relationship alive?
You know, you're living two almost separate lives. So that constant communication that, okay, I was never going to fully understand, you know, a SEAL in combat. He was never going to understand some of the struggles at home and what I was going through. But just that constant communication that even though we were living two very different paths, we were still very in tune to what each other was going through.
And did you have some rough times where you thought to yourself, this is getting rocky, Jason?
Yeah, probably not so much in the marriage. I mean, in the military career, I mean, there were ups and downs. I mean, I had a leadership failure that I suffered as a young officer, and that was something we had to navigate through. I had to grow up some. We had, obviously, when I was wounded, that was a pretty major trying time on our marriage. But
in 2007.
In 2007, I think probably the darkest and hardest time we went through, which really we opened the book with this, was the invisible wounds of war and how I really started to struggle in 2010. I was making my way. I was starting the process of medically retiring and those different things. And, that was a hard time. And Erica helped me navigate through that. And I think that's really important. A lot of our individuals out there struggle with mental health.
So you were drinking too much?
I was definitely drinking too much.
Oh, yeah. And how did you handle it, Erica?
So, you know, and I think for us, it was a few years afterwards where, you know, like everything. And I think everybody could relate to this, maybe not to the injuries and four years of almost 40 surgeries. But it was a time that our kids were good and he was done with surgeries and he was healthy and our nonprofit was doing good. And so, like, everything should have been good, but he kind of was, you know, shutting down and drinking and just kind of pushing everybody away. And it was then, and I think you've got to be so careful, but I kind of I said, this is how it starts. This is the beginning of the end.
Did you verbalize it?
I did. Yeah. I did. And, you know, you have to be careful. I think I did it in a way that it wasn't attacking. It wasn't aggressive. It wasn't blaming him. But it was saying, we have to do something. If not, this is how it starts. This is the beginning of the end.
So, and was that a wake-up call for you?
Oh, 100%. Because, you know, it's one of the things we talked about in the book. We have always run our marriage almost like a mission. I mean, in the special operations, we have no-fail missions. We approached our marriage this way. It was going to be a no-fail marriage. And we even down to having rules of engagement and how we fought. And there were some things that were non-negotiable. We never brought up divorce. You know, we were in this for life. So for her to say this is how it begins, the beginning of the end, I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, you know, if you cannot figure out how to fix this, this will be the end of our marriage.
And Erica, you, after you get catastrophically wounded, I imagine everything goes on. What's going on in your mind? How do I feel? Am I the same person? And are you going to view him the same way? I did not know you had 1,200, you had 37 surgeries, 1,200 stitches over the course of and a huge rehab. I mean, that right there is a toll. And then how are you handling that?
You know, I think we were fortunate that we had time together. We had built a, you know, strong foundation. We had a good friendship. He, you know, for the most part is very positive, which it's so much easier to support somebody when they're positive. But we were fortunate, I believe, because we had that good foundation that...
But did the accident hurt to change him? Was he still the same guy? Not the accident, the injuries, I shouldn't say.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. No, I think the same. I think we grew. I think we grew together, yeah. And I think that it made us stronger. And I think when adversity hits, like, it's either it can make you or break you. And for us, it thankfully it strengthened us.
So what made you think to yourself? You have some axioms that you brought up, like some bullet points. Commit to friendship. All right. The foundation of a successful marriage is genuine friendship. You got to like each other as people.
You do. And I mean, we're at almost a little bit over a 50% divorce rate in the United States. Now.
But you got it. Seals at 90%.
We're at 90.
Seals at 90%. That's incredible.
I mean, a lot of people think, oh, well, you deploy. Well, even when we're home, we're not home. We train all across the country. So in a typical workup, I think my last workup cycle, I was going 286 days out of the year. That wasn't a deployment year.
And how many kids do you have at the time?
Three.
Are they young?
They were young. I mean, his injuries.
So they want you around all the time.
2, 4, second grade. Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing. I mean, there's often blessings that come out of bad, hard moments. I'll be honest. It was a blessing. When I was wounded, our kids were younger, and I became non-operational. I never was able to operate again as SEAL after my injuries. Well, the blessing that came out of that is I was around my kids when they were younger. As I finished my military career and we started to build our business in the second phase of our lives. So that also helped us create an even stronger marriage as we navigated through all that. And that's what we wanted to share with people in this book.
So number two is support each other's dreams. So obviously a lot of those dreams change too as you get older too, right?
They do. And you have different dreams. Like obviously it was my dream to become a Navy SEAL. I think for anybody that becomes a SEAL, it's not just a one day you wake up and you're like, I'm going to go become a SEAL. I mean, for most of us, it's a lifelong. At some point when you were younger, you decided you were going to do this. That was my dream. It wasn't Erica's dream. She didn't dream like someday I'll you know, have a husband who's never home and who's going and doing dangerous things. But she had her own dream. She was a natural entrepreneur, and I supported her. So I think that's really important that as a couple, you're each supporting each other's dreams.
Also, when you accomplish your goal, too, you're a Navy SEAL, you're in the middle of two wars, you have multiple deployments, you've proven yourself over and over again. When you actually accomplish your goal, that's also a challenge, too, because you got to set another one. Because I remember talking to Ray Mancini. I met him. He was 35, and he was just playing softball. And I just wanted to talk to him. He was a champion when he was 29, then really never got back the glory. And I go, well, how did you deal with that? And he goes, I just convinced myself I've already hit my high, so everything else is not going to be as high, and I'm okay with that. I go, wow, I never thought anything like that. He said, I just knew the second half of my life I would not be a world champion around my belt fighting on network television. How did you handle hitting your goals at 30, right? 20, how old were you, 26?
I mean, I became a SEAL. I was 20 when I earned my Trident. I think in life, it's always about how do we continue to set goals and find those goals. like, yes, I checked the box of being a SEAL, but now we're on the entrepreneurial path. So we're trying to set goals. There are financial goals we want to hit. There are business goals we want to hit. And now those are things that we're doing together. It doesn't always have to be that way. I mean, you obviously have your goals within the media world. I'm sure your wife has different goals. But how do we support each other so that at the end of the day, it comes back to make our marriage and our ultimate life goals stronger? Like, you know, we want to, you know, we have about a 10-year plan. At 59, I want to be done. I want to be done and be able to do what I don't ever want money to be an issue that stops me from doing the things we want to do. And that was a mutual shared goal we had.
Nice.
So that's how I drive past. I want to be known for not SEAL just happens to be something I did and continue to level up in other areas of my life.
But you still speak, and now this book, it's all part of who you are.
That's right. Yeah. Right. And part of, you know, us together, because Erica runs, we run our businesses together.
You say know when to give each other space. I guess if you're going to work together, that's a huge thing. Establish rituals. Couples can strengthen their marriage to find ways to invest in small shared actions. And can you expand on, give me an example of that?
You know, it could be something as small as, you know, you're both living busy lives. And so maybe it's the morning ritual of sitting down, having coffee together. Maybe it's an evening walk. Maybe it's something really small. You know, or it could be the holidays. So for us, we collect ornaments everywhere we go. And so at Christmas time, when you're, you know, doing the tree, we're able to like kind of look back and see all the places. So
nice.
Really can be small or big.
All right. The name of the book is Mission Invincible Marriage, a battle tested guide to an enduring relationship. Jason and Erica Redmond are here. If you're watching on the stream, we certainly remember Jason. Face conflict together. So if you mean mortgage payments, kids don't get into college, get cut from a team, or getting a job, so make sure you make it a team effort.
That's right. And all, I mean, I love it. You nailed a whole bunch of things from high to low. And even when we disagree, I mean, you know, anybody out there listening to this that runs a business with your spouse, one, I have couples who say, oh my God, I could never run a business with my spouse. We're fortunate that we can, but we don't always agree. And couples fight. That's the reality. I mean, there is no perfect marriage that they never fight. But how do you approach it?
Thank you.
I'm kidding. we have rules of engagement for how we fight. I mean, I'm sure, Brian, you've seen couples who attack each other when they fight. Like, I mean, it gets brutal. Right. I have some friends like that. And we laid out like, well, you know, in the military, we try to avoid friendly fire. Yet I watch marriages where they shoot each other on a regular basis.
So you had your own experience, but also your buddies. You're watching all these marriages fail.
Yeah, yeah.
So have you helped people before you wrote this book through difficult times already?
You know, I think we have, but, you know, sometimes people, we've had several friends that have gotten divorced, and I think it was shockers to us that they don't always tell you. You don't always know what's going on underneath the surface.
Yeah, and it's really personal too. And it's always things, it's always surprising because you only see what you see on the outside. You have no idea what's happening behind closed doors. So what is the business opportunities you guys are pursuing?
Well, we're involved in a lot of things. I mean, we have short-term rentals. We have a commercial building that is office space and an event center. I am a part owner in a new whiskey seltzer company, Patriot Seltzer. I've joined TurboVets, which is the new company that's revolutionizing our technology for our disability and technology for the veteran community. It's groundbreaking. What am I missing? And then, of course, our speaking, Eagle Rise Speakers Bureau.
So let me ask you just about, I had Doug Collins on, very friendly with him. I had Doug Collins on Monday. And I wrote him over the weekend. I said, are these Doge cuts or your cuts? 80,000 on the VA. And all I hear is that everyone needs more. And he says, you wouldn't believe how inefficient the VA is. I would not cut to the bone on anything. But I have not announced 80,000. That's a goal to get down to that. So how is the VA for you and your family?
So I was just in D.C. last week.
Did you do all your surgeries through Secretary Collins?
Yeah. No, okay. I did not do my surgeries through the VA. So my surgeries were done through the military medical system and external. I literally was blessed that some of the best doctors in the world put me together because some of the complexity of my surgeries surpassed what the military was able to do.
Could you tell everyone at home what surgeries you went through real roughly?
I had to, so the structural integrity of my skull was compromised. So I took a machine gun round to the face. So it, you know, the right side of my face, cheekbone gone, orbital floor gone. So I had to have my entire orbit fixed. I had to have my eye muscles redone. I had to have bone replaced in my face. I had to have my jaw rebuilt. Dr. Eduardo Rodriguez out of NYU Langone now, he was at Johns Hopkins when he rebuilt my face. Probably one of the most premier facial reconstruction doctors in the world. Had to have my elbow rebuilt. They originally were going to amputate my arm above the elbow. You know, it's been a long road. And I've had a very good outcome. I'm super thankful.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah.
And all the other, three-piece suit. You pull it off. Every time I wear a three-piece suit, but you like that look, right?
I do. Well, you know, with jeans and boots, too. I mean, that's... I know. You got to cool. Throw the flair in there, you know?
Yeah,
I had to figure out my style.
I always said the most difficult thing in life is dressing casual because you could dress down, go work out, you could dress up, but dress casual and look good. You've done it. Hey, guys, congratulations on the book. Mission Invincible Marriage, a battle-tested guide to enduring relationship. It's on sale this week. Gary Sinise writes the forward. Guys, thanks so much. Congratulations on everything.
Yeah, Brian, thank you, man. Thanks for having us on.
Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Look, man, we're screwed. I mean, we don't know. No, Democrats don't know what to do. This is a nightmare. We thought we'd at least have, you know, Hakeem Jeffries in the speaker's chair to hold him back if we didn't have Kamala in there to do the right thing. Offending most people in the country, calling everybody sexist and racist and transphobic and every other name, and then saying, please follow us. That's not a good strategy, folks. Defending a broken status quo and offending most of the country, turns out, is not as popular as my party thought it was going to be.
You know, it's just amazing. I like Van Jones. You know, obviously don't agree on everything, but he just had to say what he said. You know, he'll go off and one day be fiery and call Donald Trump a racist. And then at the same time, he'll walk it back and say, I got huge problems with my party. Now is the time for commentators, not congressmen and women, to be honest. He says they are absolutely rudderless. They're doubling down on issues nobody cares about. They said, let's go back to the status quo that's not popular. I also thought it was interesting to see Bill Maher do it again. He did it to Jasmine Crockett and just say, what is with the tone? You know, you're supposed to have all this talent. Listen to Jasmine Crockett. Listen to Bill Maher on Jasmine Crockett.
The Democrats seem so lost. And here's Jasmine Crockett, who is, I thought, a big leader in the Democratic Party. Her quote is, this is a terrible nightmare. Somebody slap me and wake me the f*** up because I'm ready to get on with it. On with what would be my first question. And also, this is the way a leader, this is like how a podcaster talks or some shit. Can you imagine, I don't know, Obama saying, oh, man, dude, this is whack.
Show some class. By the way, Bill Maher going with Kid Rock to visit President Trump. I'd like to go if you're looking for a third or a fourth.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of The Rich Zeoli Show, Rich Zeoli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.